Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, there was a 79% increase in the number of complaints to the Ombudsman for Children's Office in 2021, reflecting the disruption experienced by children, particularly in the area of education. Delays in accessing services, bullying, child homelessness and poverty are also dealt with in the Ombudsman for Children's Office annual report for last year. And Niall Muldoon, the Children's Ombudsman, joins me now. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Claire.
The report is called Resilience Tested, and it reveals the impact of the past 2 years. And you'd expect that there will be a knock-on effect for years to come on children. Will you outline to us what that knock-on effect is likely to look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you said, we've got a huge increase, nearly 80% increase in complaints. And I think what it highlights to us is that we've kept using the word resilient for children over the last 2 years, and I think it's very unfair and misleading. I think essentially our children have been damaged by this COVID pandemic and by the impact of it throughout in many different ways. The education system is probably the most obvious one, where we got 53% of our complaints. You know, so they lost out on opportunities to make friends, to change friends, to be involved in sporting and drama, all those areas. They also lost out on opportunities with families and friends outside of school, where they didn't get a chance to grow and to mature. They may have lost loved ones through the pandemic, that they didn't get a proper usual funeral and bereavement process. So the children that we are seeing over the last 2 years are certainly going to feel an impact over many, many years to come. And it's the increase, I think it's something like a 30% increase in referrals to mental health services at the moment in that area. So we are going to have to look at this and see how we can adjust and help them to come back to their best selves in the future.
Now, your report says that education is the subject of most complaints, and a sizable proportion of that, 10% of those, refer to bullying, how bullying issues are handled, bullying not being adequately identified and acted upon. Is it that the schools are not managing to tackle the problem effectively?
I think there's a range of issues happening now. I think the current policy for anti-bullying policy for schools was created in 2013, and things have changed so enormously in that time, Claire. Things like cyberbullying weren't a big issue. Things like homophobia or transphobia, or even issues like consent and sexually inappropriate behaviour weren't mentioned in the anti-bullying policies. So schools are now a microcosm of society, and things are changing and activities are changing. The type of bullying is changing. Online is growing more and more. Physical is not as much. Ignoring people is becoming a really strong form of bullying. So I think currently the Department of Education are reviewing their anti-bullying policies, and we'll be feeding into that next week. And from our experience with the complaints we get, schools are grappling with trying to name and deal with a lot of those issues. So some schools find it difficult to call it bullying.
But it's an incredibly difficult subject for a school to deal with, isn't it?
Absolutely correct. And again, as I say, I think it's become much more subtle as well. You know, one of the things we've asked for a number of years now is that the Department of Education would gather the information on bullying throughout the country, rather than just acknowledge that every school has an anti-bullying policy. They would find out what was happened in that year in every school about bullying, how many cases there were, how it was handled, and what they were designated as. So, I mean, is it racism? Is it sectarianism? Is it homophobia? Is it sexual contact? Those things need to be known. And once we have that data, we can start to help the teachers and the principals to really understand how to cope with it better.
People won't be surprised to hear that there are parents of children with special educational needs who really, really struggle getting the right and appropriate school place in their local area. So this is just down to luck, is it? It's where you're born and where you live. That's really the criteria that will decide whether you get the place that you need for your child.
Yeah, certainly. It's from our point of view, we've been very frustrated by the lack of places that have been made available for children with special education needs. You can see it in a number of areas around the country, Dublin 15, South Dublin, Cork, and various other areas have pressure zone, so to speak. But it's, from our point of view, it's, there's a lot of these things are predictable. We know who the children are going to be. We know what spaces are needed for them. There should be some degree of forward planning that prevents this having to become an issue. We have a huge number issue now coming forward into secondary school, where a lot of the children who went into the probably the original special needs classes are coming through to second level in the next year or two, and there isn't enough places for them there. And that's why we've initiated a report that we're going to hopefully publish in the next month or two into school places and forward planning, because it seems to be less than adequate. We now have a legislation which allows the minister to designate a school to take children, but we shouldn't have to get to that stage. I mean, with all the information from the census and from Department of Education themselves and from parents feeding in, we should be able to plan so these children don't have to go outside of their area to get the access to education that they deserve. Because being in the local area is how they integrate, it's how they become part of the community, and it's how they thrive.
Mm-hmm. What's your greatest concern expressed in this report when you look back at 2021 and the complaints in a whole, the investigations that you carried out? What are you most worried about, Niall?
I suppose I'm still concerned, Claire, that as a state and as a public set of public bodies, we don't put the best interests of children to the fore in our thinking. You know, many of the decisions are made based on what we can afford, what the resources are, and where we're coming from as a system. And the children are being left behind, and you'll see that through a number of the case studies. That, you know, a little bit of forward thinking, a little bit of thinking on behalf of what the child actually needs in this situation, could have changed their lives completely. I think we don't have enough of that. We created a thing called the Child Rights Impact Assessment. We carried it out last year as well. And that's something we're pushing the government to try and do more often, is that ahead of any decision, whether it's on finance or budgeting or purchasing or policies, that they look at it and say, what is the impact on children in regards to this decision? And then you start to think in a different way. You start to preempt these things and prevent some of the issues these poor children are going through. So I think we need to step up in that regard. The other piece that would help there would be an incorporation into law of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, which again would insist that every decision made by government and public bodies would have to think of the child's best interests. We need to move closer to that as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of vulnerable children, earlier this month, 113 Ukrainian people who had been living near Chernobyl arrived into Ireland with the help of a charity, a Mayo charity called Candle of Grace. Now, there were 59 children as part of that group who were travelling without a parent. Do you have any child protection concerns about unaccompanied minors arriving here from Ukraine?
Well, we've been linking with Tuzla from the very first day this horrible war has come into being, and since we opened our arms as a nation to bring families and children in here, we've linked with Tuzla. And to be fair, the Department of Children and Tuzla have done an enormous work at the one-stop shop in Dublin Airport. And from our point of view, we've been contacted by the Ukrainian Children's Commissioner to make sure that every child that comes in, whether unaccompanied or not, are registered with the Ukrainian embassy. So that is happening, so that the at the later stage when we look for reunification, we know where every child is. But from a child protection point of view, Tuzla need to be across them, and they are across those. The unaccompanied minors who come in, it's hugely important that Tuzla know who they are and where they're being looked after. And I think they did engage in that particular situation as well, but it just mm-hmm. took a bit longer because they weren't aware of them coming in at that stage.
Because these volunteer groups, I mean, of course they're well-intentioned, but the Irish Office of the United Nations said that unaccompanied minors from Ukraine to Ireland, that doing this, bringing them in this way, it leaves them open to a heightened risk of exploitation. Do you agree with that?
Well, I suppose I listened to Bernard Gloucester, the CEO of Tuzla, on Sunday, saying that there's no, absolutely no shadow cast upon the willingness and openness of any charity to bring children home. But it is important to follow the rules and the regulations and to inform the people as early as possible who are looking after and have the statutory obligation for child protection. So from our point of view, we've also urged Department of Justice and Department of Children to get proper training on child trafficking. But any professional or any individual working with children in these most vulnerable situations. You know, you're coming from a war-torn area, you've been traumatized as a child, and you have no adult accompanying you, then you need the best possible support viable in the country. And that's something we need to be aware of, and to know that there are bad actors out there who could take advantage of that.
You mentioned Tuslan. You say in your report that in 2021 you had 42 reports where there were child protection and welfare concerns. Now, why are those reports coming to your office?
Well, oftentimes what happens is we get complaints about perhaps the way Tuslan have handled a child protection issue. And in reporting that, we might often have to, we might hear a little bit different information. We might have to follow through on that report. But people will oftentimes, we might be the first people they've talked to about certain situations. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate that we shouldn't really be the first one. But if we are, we make sure that we follow through with the proper statutory obligations and provide them with contact to Tuslan and to the Gardaí as necessary.
All right, Dr. Niall Muldoon, we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining us this morning, the Ombudsman for Children, on the office's annual report. Next up, a 17-year-old becomes the only openly gay professional footballer in Britain. Is it a watershed moment? That's next.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.